Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. The Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, has been crisscrossing the state on a listening tour to hear what people have to say about legalizing recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania. Before Fetterman became Lieutenant Governor, he had begun to serve in his fourth term as mayor of Braddock. Fetterman is known for his unconventional approaches to politics, winning his first term as mayor by one vote. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's so great to be back here.
You're in State College to find out what Pennsylvanians think about the idea of legalizing recreational marijuana, and it's one stop on your listening tour to all 67 counties. Yeah. And you recently summed up what you've been hearing, saying that there is about 70% support.
I would say conservatively, the across-the-board level of support in the now 40 counties we've been to, I would say upper 60s to around the 70% threshold. It's what you don't hear anymore. You know, you don't hear the reefer madness, you know, this idea that it's like this is somehow belongs in the same category as some of these other harder drugs, or that, you know, this is going to take us in a terrible direction. It's you hear very little of that. You still, of course, have people that are opposed, but it's not for reasons like in that reefer madness zone.
So public opinion is largely shifting on it, but you'll need more than public opinion if you want to change the law in Pennsylvania. And there are other factors that'll go into the decision-making process. How do you see this tour kind of fitting in with that bigger picture?
Well, I think given that the states around us are all having this conversation and they're in different stages. In fact, New Jersey even was poised to take a vote on it just, I think, last week or so. So it would be irresponsible for Pennsylvania not to be engaging in this kind of a conversation. Now, as you correctly pointed out, it would require an act of the legislature, and, you know, who knows where we're at on that. But I know everyone to be reasonable for the most part on the other side, and I think there's an emerging understanding that this is on its way, but we have to have a conversation, and that's exactly what we're having here. There's no right answers or wrong answers. We are going to every county to create a secure environment where no matter where you are on the spectrum, you can feel comfortable sharing that view.
You're also accepting online comments, and I think you said you've gotten about 30,000.
Yeah, well over 30,000 so far. We also distribute comment cards, and we have a whole team of interns and other staffers, you know, analyzing every comment card that we get and collecting and tabulating all these all this information on a rolling basis. We are tracking every opinion.
So if someone doesn't feel comfortable speaking out at a public meeting, there are other options for getting
Absolutely. They can fill in a card and or they can go online as well, too. I mean, anyone's welcome to feel how they do about speaking, but I've never once had to demand civility from an audience in 40 different counties so far. Everyone has been really open to hearing both sides of the equation. And I think that's missing from a lot of our political conversations these days. I don't have to tell any of your listeners that things are more and more polarized. And to be in a room with someone who may disagree with you on a particular issue and to hear how that person views and looks at the world, I think is illuminating in any conversation.
Have you started tabulating those comments that you're getting online? Are those aligning the same way?
They're aligning in the same way, and they're demonstrating two things. One, I think an emerging overall opinion, and I think it's also demonstrating just how interested in how engaged people are. So I think that's representative of two things that indicate that this has been a necessary step for Governor Wolf to take. And I applaud his vision for asking me to take this on. And it's really been a great experience.
And you've said that there's near unanimous support for decriminalization, a little bit different than legalization.
Definitely.
And I've heard that from care providers talking to them at events like this.
I so often, you know, they'll have someone say, well, you know what, I'm not there with recreational, but I don't want anyone's life ruined. I don't want to mark on someone's permanent record for having a nonviolent marijuana possessions. And as the chair of the Board of Pardons here in Pennsylvania, you know, I look at that other side, and we are going to be looking at a way we can kind of aggregate these kind of wholesale pardons that would free people from, you know, mistake along those lines as well, too. So I think there's universal, you know, near virtual universal consent for some kind of decriminalization where we're not harming people's future prospects over something like that.
And by wholesale pardon, do you mean you're looking at a way to say, okay, everybody who has been convicted of possessing a small amount or something
well,
like that?
Well, I mean, ideally, I would love a wholesale expungement. However, in this process, we envision a process where if they meet, you know, this criteria, that criteria, as long as they fit in that box, we could all just aggregate them and vote them up or down. And of course, it would be a unanimous thing.
Some of the concerns I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard as well, is from care providers who are worried about young people that are susceptible to addiction, mm-hmm. and also concerns about people driving under the influence.
Yep.
How would you see the state addressing those if it were to go in the direction?
It would have to address those. And we've been getting a lot of good feedback and a lot of good insight. People that are concerned, as I said, it's not about the reefer madness, like it's crazy. I think it's kind of a scientific consensus that these brains are developing and are in formation. And this can have an adverse effect. And I think the pro side and the con side both acknowledge that. And it certainly would be something that would be factored in. I can't imagine it wouldn't be.
Do you think Pennsylvania would take a look at what other states are doing to decide?
I'm sure. I mean, if we ever get to that point, I want to give, tip of my hat to the legislature on the quality of the medical cannabis program here in Pennsylvania. I think it's really the envy of the states in terms of the quality of the cannabis, the effect that it's having on people. The one issue that I hear consistently, and this is a justification for going recreational, is the expense. The dispensaries are great. The products are great. The range of products are great. But the cost can be prohibitive to someone on a fixed income or someone who just really believes that, insurance doesn't cover it.
Right.
So you're footing the bill on this. So if that's not the number one concern I hear, it sure is number two, I would say.
State Representative Chris Dush, a Republican from Jefferson County, and others have expressed skepticism. And
to be clear, only Mr. Dush has expressed skepticism.
Okay.
And he wasn't willing to do that when we were face-to-face in his home district. But it was clear that he had been trying to bring people to the meeting, and good for him. We want to have this conversation with anyone. But when you're bringing your own mother to the meeting and not introducing her and having her sit with you, but sitting in the other side of the room as a ringer, claiming that, this is the worst conversation we've ever had. I think that just demonstrates where people are at. If you have to pack a room to try to get an opinion, then that's not really much of an opinion. But nevertheless, even after all that, he was still welcome to speak. He's publicly addressed three of the meetings that he's been to: Venango, Jefferson, and Indiana. He was afforded much more time than just anyone off the street to address those concerns. It's just an attempt on his part to deny the objectivity and the completely neutral and open and transparent means that we're conducting this.
For people listening who aren't familiar with kind of the backstory on that, he has said that you or others may have been stacking the audience.
Yeah.
And you responded on social media saying that it looks like opponents are the ones trying to stack the audience.
They are stacking it. Like, he undoubtedly tried to stack the crowd in Jefferson. And by all means, if he wants to make sure he invites people to come, fine. We want to hear from everybody. And given the sample size that we're accruing, you can't tilt those numbers or skew those numbers. It's absurd. But I do say he is a lone minority of individuals. I've been joined by many representatives and state senators from the other side of the aisle at these meetings. And it's been a pleasant, cordial, and collegial experience. And there's really just been that one example.
But there is definitely political opposition to the idea of legalizing it outright. I talked not that long ago with Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman, and he said he was against it and others are against it.
I had a conversation with Leader Corman, and I have an enormous amount of respect for him personally. And I know both he and I are both the fathers of, I think, three children each. And of course we have concerns, and of course there's issues. But I also believe Leader Corman to be an incredibly principled, and we may not agree on everything, but I don't think he's unreasonable or he's certainly not part of some, fringe element of within his own party. I enjoy working with him in the Senate.
Why do you support legalizing marijuana?
Well, I do personally for several reasons, but I really tell people that my opinions really aren't what's interesting. It's what is interesting is what everybody in Pennsylvania thinks. My campaign, when I was in state college last year, both as a candidate, and then as the nominee with Governor Wolf, that's when my views were kind of out there. And now it's about your views. And that's what we're here in State College for. And that's why we're going to Fulton County tomorrow night. That's why we're going to Clarion County on Thursday night. That's why we were in Jefferson County. That's why we were in Forest County. I think a lot of people don't even realize we have a Forest County in Pennsylvania.
Right. Lots of forests.
Yeah. It's really about getting out and meeting everyone where they're at and having them weigh in on this important subject.
One last question on the topic of legalizing marijuana. What's your timeline? When do you expect to kind of summarize your findings? And
well, I can tell you the tour we expect to wrap up, I think, around May 19th, so a little over a month from now. And we are cranking them out. We're just not stopping until we hit 67. And it's a true all-hands-on-deck operation here, where we want to hear from every Pennsylvanian, and we want to generate a conversation that the people of Pennsylvania can feel confidence in, that it was transparent, that it was inclusive, and it was secure for everybody that wanted to participate at any level, whether it's in person, on paper, or online.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Fetterman is in his first term in office after serving as mayor of Braddock. I read that you didn't pay a lot of attention to politics or even vote before you were in your 30s. Is that true? And what changed?
Well, I became much more politically active as I got older. But I had some personal things happen to me early in my early 20s that kind of put me on a different path that ultimately led me to public service as a career. It's not something that I would have anticipated when I was, say, 21 years old to have taken that path.
And are you talking about your life changing after your friend died?
Yeah, my friend actually about a little over a week ago was the 26th anniversary of that accident. And in the aftermath of that, I was matched up with I joined Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and I was matched up with a little boy who was then 8 years old at the time, who had both of his parents lost to AIDS. And that really kind of fried my circuitry there. And I was like, you know what? I want to, you know, look at a different path. And that's kind of the path I ended up on that brought me to public policy and public service, and ultimately led me to join AmeriCorps for service. Ultimately, that's what brought me to Braddock, Pennsylvania. And that's what ultimately brought me to the lieutenant governor's office.
So you see this kind of as a continuation of that?
Very much so. And while I certainly love going to every county for any reason, certainly talking about this has been great. Another one of the things that I'm excited to be working on is the pardons, part of criminal justice reform here in Pennsylvania. The board that I chaired, we recently just pardoned 3 lifers who have served a combined total of, I believe, maybe 130 years in prison. And these were individuals that didn't pull the trigger. Their accomplices were out years and years ago, the ones that actually pulled the trigger. It's a flaw in the criminal justice system here that this is the only mechanism available for redress. So it's a very important tool. And I'm proud to work with Governor Wolf as a partner in criminal justice reform here in Pennsylvania. And we just hired a new pardon secretary here in the state. And what's one of the many amazing things about Brandon Flood, who's our new secretary, is that he actually went through the process. And who would know better than someone who had gone through the process? Who would know better than the power of the example that we in Pennsylvania truly believe in second chances? And it's not too late to come in and come back and participate more deeply, more fully, be able to go on and volunteer at your child's school. And some of the stories that you hear are wrenching from people that are applying for pardons. And no one would want to be judged on the biggest mistake they may have made in their life for the rest of their lives. And the pardons process is a mechanism that allows you to put that behind you.
One of the things you did when you first became chairman of the Board of Pardons is you eliminated the fee for applying for pardons. And then you also mentioned appointing Brandon Flood.
Yeah. And we're going to be rolling out a bunch of other reforms. Just common sense things. It's counterproductive to society's goal, in my opinion, to permanently punish and exclude individuals based on a mistake that they made, in some cases, 20 or 30 years ago. They can't go deer hunting. They can't volunteer at their kid's school. They can't get a job. They had to give up the career that they always envisioned for themselves. It's crazy. Especially many of these can involve nonviolent drug convictions or some kind of misdemeanor or theft that involved when they were addicted. We had one where they had a shoplifting conviction from 1986 or something. I mean, just things that are just on their record that stop them from fully participating. So it's great to just be able to wipe that clean.
Are you getting any pushback from that, from the other side of
no,
the argument?
No, no. In fact, as a testament to, I think we're in a really wonderful window of bipartisan criminal justice reform. We had a colleague of mine from the Senate, Senator Camara Bartolotta, Republican, stand with us when we announced Secretary Flood as our new choice. I mean, to have a Republican standing with, you know, a former felon that is now the new, I mean, I think that's extraordinary. And I think it speaks to the common sense and the mandate of refining our criminal justice system in Pennsylvania that punishes and places those that, you know, that need to be removed. But it also integrates and forgives those that it just makes it's the right thing to do.
It is kind of surprising that that's happening now, because in other times there have been a lot of concerns, especially from Democrats, mm-hmm. of appearing, you know, so-called soft on crime.
Well, it's not soft on crime.
But there's been that concern about appearing that way.
But I don't believe you're soft on crime when you can look at an individual who's 68 years old. Like we did, we commuted his sentence. He made a terrible, terrible mistake when he was 18 years old, 2 months after his 18th birthday. And he and his friends, who were under 18 at the time, went to rob a bank. He was outside in the car. Something went wrong, and an individual in the bank lost his life. Tragic, awful, awful. But his accomplices were out years and years and years early. This man had been in prison since 1968. I was born in August of 1969. So think how the world's changed. You know, watch The Shawshank Redemption. Morgan Freeman's character was in it for 40 years. This guy did 12 more beyond that. And you have to ask yourself as a society, how much is enough? How much is enough? I just believe we believe in second chances. And I think 52 years is enough, particularly when the person that actually did pull the trigger and there was no premeditated plan to kill anybody. I think that makes sense. And also from a cost perspective, these are elderly prisoners that they're the cost drivers a lot in the penal system.
You've said you'd also like to change what's needed to pardon someone who received a life or death
sentence.
Well,
you spoke on the soft on crime and the overreaction. Maybe 30 years ago, one of my predecessors, Mark Singel, was involved in a case where they pardoned somebody. It used to be just a 3-2 vote. And then one of these individuals went out and did something terrible and awful and reprehensible. And that created a backlash. And in response to the horror of that terrible crime, they reversed the law to be 5-0. And that's an incredibly high threshold. And I think it's too high, quite frankly. And a lot of other people agree with me. I'm proposing more of a compromise. I don't think we can get back to majority. I don't think maybe we should get back to majority. But what about 4-1, where it gives somebody an out? It gives somebody with a conscience that, like, I just can't do this. It gives them an out, and it's still a high threshold, but not impossibly or incredibly high.
On another topic, immigration and what's going on in the United States mm-hmm. borders is obviously getting a lot of attention right now. And your wife, Giselle, was an undocumented yep. immigrant mm-hmm. who came to the United States with her family as a child from Brazil. How do you see her background, your family's background, informing your opinion about immigration?
It informs everything about it. It's sobering to think that our children are the same age when she came to this country. And I couldn't imagine my son or daughter showing up in a country where they didn't speak the language and they're not there legally and they're fleeing a dangerous situation. And what would I want for them? And my wife is so grateful and celebrates this country. And I like to think she is one of the best possible faces for immigration, because I think she represents what true immigration, the truth of immigration. And you have the other side that, quite frankly, demagogues it and creates fear I don't understand it. We're all immigrants in some way or another. And the level of rhetoric and the lack of compassion and the unfolding tragedy at the border breaks my heart. Just knowing that my wife was in that situation and how fortunate I am to have her and our family, it just reaffirms to me that that immigration is what has made and will continue to make this country great.
You ran as an outsider for the U.S. Senate in the 2016 Democratic primary, and you lost to Katie McGinty. And the Republican ended up winning that race. Are you thinking about running for that seat again?
I don't know. I don't know what the future holds, other than all 67 counties, at least for legalized recreational cannabis, and more work on the pardons and whatever Governor Wolf asks me to do. I do believe that it's important that We examine, 2020 and all like-minded individuals, Democratic, wherever you are on the spectrum, whoever our nominee is, please get behind him or her. Because, again, just me personally, we've seen the merchandise. There's no excuse not to this time. I don't think we as a party can afford to say, well, my person isn't the nominee. Well, I'm going to sit this one out. Sitting it out is essentially a vote for the other side, and I don't think any of us would want that.
And you actually ended up backing Katie McGinty, right?
I did. Yeah. I did, because even though I didn't agree with her and I wasn't she certainly wasn't my first choice in the primary, but she was far better choice than Pat Toomey. And you do what's right for your state. You do what's right for your party and for just the Commonwealth. So I was grateful for the opportunity to campaign on her behalf and enthusiastically for Secretary Clinton, too. I warned individuals, like, look, you can't sit this one out.
And you had been a Bernie Sanders supporter.
Yeah, I had been a Sanders supporter. I was the only candidate to endorse Sanders. And I would beg folks, like, look, Bernie didn't win. We all have to come out for Secretary Clinton. And if you don't, Trump wins. They win the Senate. They pack the court. And then that's the real prize, is the Supreme Court. Let's say there's a progressive revolution and we can enact every policy of our dreams. Where does everything end up these days? At the Supreme Court. And they already have a solid conservative majority. And the heroic Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, I think, 86. And she's surviving cancer and she's still going strong. But the danger is then the Supreme Court. And, the sum of all my fears in 2016 became to realize. And I just hope we don't slip into that kind of mentality in 2020.
There is a big field of Democrats. Of course, Bernie Sanders is among them again. Have you picked one yet?
I'm picking the winner. I'm picking whoever our winner is right now, because that's really, the take-home message is that debate is healthy. Primaries can be healthy. What isn't healthy is a level of viciousness and just looking to destroy our fellow, any one of them that you see, whether it's Beto, whether it's Elizabeth Warren, whether it's Mayor Pete, whether it's Cory Booker, any of these are really stand-up individuals that are a profound and dramatic contrast to Donald Trump. We need to really create an environment where we pick our person and then we unite behind that person and we take our country back.
Looking again at state politics, Governor Wolf has proposed funding major infrastructure improvements with a tax on natural gas, a severance tax, and he's saying $4.5 billion over time for these.
Truly brilliant idea, because the things that Pennsylvania needs more than anything else is investment in infrastructure. It needs economic development in communities, especially rural counties, that need broadband. In many parts of Pennsylvania, when you drive, you can look at your cell phone. The bars go from 3, 2, 1 to LOL. We all need the internet. That's right there with electricity in terms of being a fully participating member of the Commonwealth. And this would help fund that. This is a true 67 county solution. a dilapidated building or blight looks the same in a red county as it does in a blue county. You know, broadband, we're pretty good on broadband in the Pittsburgh area, but we sure need help with blight. We all need infrastructure improvements. Nobody likes to get a gold-plated shovel and an oversized novelty check to tear down a building. That's not, you know, like people don't turn out for that. It's hard to get those resources. This provides those resources. And it does it in a way that is fair because those monies are going coming from outside Pennsylvania into our coffers. And that money is dedicated for these kind of purposes. It is a reverse unfunded mandate. I got a chance to address a statewide convention of township supervisors. They all had these buttons on, you know, no unfunded mandates. And I said, well, guess what? This is a reverse unfunded mandate. You know, we're trying to give you this money at no cost to you, deduce as you see fit. And it's like Christmas 365. That's what I call it. And it's a great idea that I believe, you know, red Pennsylvania can get behind as enthusiastically as blue.
Do you realistically see that happening because the governor has tried to get a severance tax
office? It's different this time because these monies aren't going into the general fund and just kind of getting lost in the big pile. It's its own specific isolated line item. And these funds go directly back to these communities. It allows us to join every other state that has this kind of gas exploration and extraction. And this isn't some, you know, tax and spend socialist fantasy. This is Wyoming. This is Oklahoma. This is Texas. You know, these are ruby red states. So this isn't some radical idea. This is just bringing Pennsylvania in line as the last and only state in the country that does not do this. It's not going to cost us jobs. In fact, it's going to create extra jobs because of all the infrastructure projects and all of the other things that are going to be funded as a result of Governor Wolf's initiative here, Restore PA.
We've talked about a lot of issues. What do you see as the biggest thing that state government can do in your upcoming term to make Pennsylvanians' lives better, and how would it happen?
I genuinely believe Restore PA is one of those things. You know, I chair the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Board, and I met with them when I first took office, and one of the department heads said, I went back and I ran the numbers. Downpour heavy rain events in Pennsylvania over the last 50 years have increased 75%. That's a fact. You want to call it climate change, whatever you want to call it. That's a fact. He's like, numbers are numbers. They don't lie. And we have to realize that we have to do something about it. You know, Governor Wolf doesn't like going to a community that's been ravaged by floods and with just a warm handshake and sincere condolences for their loss. He wants to be able to do something about it. And with Restore PA, he can. And these issues affect every community in one way. And a flooded basement looks and smells the same in a red county as it does in a blue county. Infrastructure needs are across the line. Criminal justice reform. Governor Wolf is a national thought leader on criminal justice reform. He also was recently cited by the American Medical Association as in response to the opioid crisis and was invited to address the national governor's group to talk about what the work we've done in Pennsylvania. So Governor Wolf is really deserved a second term, earned a second term, and I'm proud to serve as his partner.
Do you think you'll run for governor?
Like I said, what I do know is that I'm going to go to all 67 counties. I'm here to be a part of what I'm asked and called to do. I can't emphasize enough what an enormous honor it is to serve as your lieutenant governor. I'm truly, truly grateful. And it's really just about being so fortunate to be able to serve. And that's a journey that started 26 years ago this month. And I'm still on it. And I'm honored to be here in Happy Valley.
Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Pennsylvania's Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Fetterman is in his first term in office after serving as mayor of Braddock. He's making stops across the state on a listening tour to find out what people think about the idea of legalizing recreational marijuana. To hear this and other episodes of Take Note, go to wpsu.org/take note. I'm Ann Danahy, WPSU.